The White House wants to hit cyber attackers where it hurts, in their wallets. President Obama adds one more piece to the tricky cybersecurity puzzle in the form of a new executive order. The biggest missing piece now, legislation, could still come from Congress by Memorial Day. Federal News Radio's executive editor Jason Miller joins me now with details on the latest White House gambit and how it fits into the broader strategy of cyber information sharing. Jason, good morning.
Good morning, Tom.
We've got a lot of moving pieces here. Let's start with the executive order. What does it call for?
Well, basically, the new EO would let the State Department, the Justice Department, and the Treasury Department, if you will, execute economic sanctions against anyone. This is people or organizations, could be nation states, could be anybody who is directly responsible for or benefits from a cyber attack against the nation's critical infrastructure. And this is ranging anything from the electric grid to telecommunications sector to the financial services sector. The order really focuses on four what they call significant harms that could lead to sanctions. They are attacks against critical infrastructure services, disruption of computer networks on a wide scale, theft of trade secrets or aiding and abetting those stolen goods or those other two activities. Michael Daniel is the White House cybersecurity coordinator.
This is a new authority for us. We don't have a specific set of targets at this time because we felt it was important to get this authority in place to enable us to both deal with any future incidents that might occur that rise to this level, but also as a piece of deterrence for those that have been thinking that they can hide behind borders where there are weak governments or weak cyber laws or governments that aren't willing to cooperate. And so this is really a tool that's designed for us to be able to use in cases where we don't believe our existing tools of diplomacy and law enforcement and others are adequate or appropriate. It's not one that we expect to be using, you know, every day, but it is one that we anticipate that we will be able to use in a very targeted and judicious manner.
Now, Daniel spoke Wednesday during an event sponsored by the Center for Strategic and International Studies in Washington. He says the EO is not targeted at any one region or any one country because the White House really wanted to give those agencies the flexibility to figure out who did what, when, how, why. Because, Tom, as we know, attribution when it comes to cyber attacks is very, very difficult to be certain of. So if it's just focused on, you know, the Middle East or just focused on Asia, that would not be broad enough because the attacks can come from anywhere. Now, Daniel says the EO isn't focused on just those doing the hacking or the cyber attacks, but those actually who are actually funding that bad actors.
If you're talking about sanctions, they need to be used in the pursuit of our national level interest and in used carefully and, as I said, judiciously. So the reason for the word significant is that this is not something that's meant to be used to promote the narrow interests of any one particular U.S. company. It has to be something that actually rises to a level of national concern. And that was the use of the term significant deliberately. The term malicious cyber activity, we wanted to arrive at a term that obviously denoted something bad, but we were also trying to enable us not to get locked into terms like attack and other sorts of things that you have a lot of debate about, but enable a broad enough definition that we could encompass the wide range of theft and intrusions and the kinds of bad behavior that is endemic, unfortunately, in cyberspace.
Now, while Daniel wouldn't comment on how the process would work to decide who would be come under these sanctions and who wouldn't, he says the administration is considering targets already for these possible sanctions. He says there is an interagency process to look at entities or organizations or individuals that State, Treasury, Justice may designate for sanctions under this EO.
Jason, why did the Obama administration decide now there was a need for this executive order?
Well, I think there's a couple of reasons we can easily point to. I think, as you heard Daniel say, this is a new set of authorities the administration didn't have, so they felt that this was needed. Second, the chances of an attack against critical infrastructure is a real concern, and it's one that's probably already happened, and it's growing every single day. So they want to have some tools to say, how do we respond if that should happen? And I think the third reason, Tom, is just the handwriting on the wall. When you look at the host of U.S. companies ranging from Target to J.P. Morgan Chase to Sony that have faced and suffered from cyber attacks, how can the U.S. respond? Well, there's a limited number of ways, and this just adds one more. Daniel did say that the EO has been in the works for some time, but the hack against Sony Pictures really helped push it along.
The Sony Pictures incident drove home the point that we needed to make sure that we had this tool available to us in order to continue expanding that array of options that we have to respond to those kinds of incidents. So I wouldn't say that it's in direct response to that, but it has certainly shaped our thinking about the need to ensure that we had this capability.
If you remember, Tom, what the White House did in response to the Sony hack, which they blamed on North Korea, they sanctioned not only the government organizations, but also private, quote-unquote, organizations that worked directly with the government and about 10 people associated with the North Korean government. So as you can see, that they really went after a specific set that was almost like a model in some ways for this broader set of authorities. Daniel says the EO is not trying to get ahead of a potential or real cyber attack that is coming. He says the White House has no indicators of an imminent attack. It just, you know, these things take time, and this was the time it came out.
We're speaking with Federal News Radio's executive editor, Jason Miller. Jason, this is the second executive order from the president this year on cyber matters, and there's a lot of activity finally on Capitol Hill. I think there's now a new House bill, or a revived version of the House bill that's close to the Senate bill, and so on. How does this all fit together? What's the grand picture we're seeing emerge here?
Well, I think the first piece of it is the executive orders is clear why the administration is going down this path. It, you know, basically, the Obama administration has said if the Congress will not act with legislation, the executive branch will take as much cyber action as possible. I think that's why you saw the EO from yesterday on sanctions. You saw another executive order on cyber information sharing from February. And you've seen a lot of other actions over the last few years. Now, Daniel says the executive orders and, you know, even new constructs like the Cyber Threat Intelligence Center really are part of a broader interagency effort to raise the level of awareness about cybersecurity across government. Daniel says for many agencies, and this is a little surprising, but cybersecurity is a relatively new and emerging mission. For us, Tom, who we cover all the time, it's hard to believe that. But people who are, you know, knee deep in delivering services to citizens and in dealing with, you know, agriculture, for instance, they may not actually think about cybersecurity the same way we do. Daniel says the government is building the tool set and the organizational and policy capabilities to go after the bad guys to combat the threat. That's why you're seeing these different tools, the different executive orders and such coming. Daniel says the Cyber Information Sharing EO, for instance, the one that was just issued in February, is actually making progress, especially around the Cyber Threat Intelligence Center.
CTIC is designed to deliberately be a streamlined and small organization. So it will primarily be staffed by detailees and assignees from other federal entities, although it may well have some permanent staff of its own to ensure some continuity. I am sure that it will also be augmented to a certain degree with contractors to support the workforce. Our target number is around 50 people for this organization, so ultimately not a very large entity to do this, because the goal is to leverage the existing capabilities, the very, very robust capabilities that we've built at the agencies, but to knit them together more effectively. It's really that integration and support function that CTIC is designed to do. We're driving towards, having CTIC start producing products over the next few months, but I'm sure that it's one that we will try some things out, and we'll discover that some things work really, really well, and we'll decide on some others, wow, that sounded really good on paper and doesn't work so well in practice, and we'll make adjustments.
Now, as a reminder, Tom, the Information Sharing Executive Order also calls for the creation of what they call Information Sharing and Analysis Organizations, and also a Critical Infrastructure Protection Program that would be run by the Homeland Security Department. All of those pieces are moving. I think the CTIC is probably the one that's most advanced. Now, as for other things that could be going on, the legislation piece now is coming into play. It seems like Congress is really starting to move, and in fact, the cyber information sharing legislation could be it to the president's desk by Memorial Day. Both the House and Senate have versions of their own bill, and both are being worked through the process. In fact, Daniel says he's more optimistic today than he's ever been about the Congress' ability to pass a bill around cyber information sharing. David Granis is the minority staff director of the Senate Intelligence Committee.
The legislation on both sides is quite similar. The differences are not structural. They have to do more with exactly how you require or permit or shape different things. And I know for the Senate, I believe for the House, there will be a fairly open amendment process. So once you get there, any kind of agreement you've got will go out the window anyway, because the Senate will work its will. I think what is most likely to happen is both chambers will pass a bill. There will be discussions to see whether or not it'll be possible to come to an agreement and then send it back and forth outside of formal conference. But the goal here is to get the best product at a reasonable speed.
Now, Granite says the White House's efforts around cyber information sharing or sanctions are important and necessary, but they're not sufficient. I think that's why legislation is needed, and partly because the executive branch can only go so far with their executive orders. One of the best examples is liability protection for companies sharing information with the government. He says the Intelligence Committee would have liked to have legislation already. They would have liked to have more vocal support from the White House on their current bills, but all that is starting to come into place, at least, and I think there is a lot of optimism growing on Capitol Hill. Granite says he expects the Senate and House to take up their own versions, again, of these cyber information sharing bills just separately, you know, later this month, and then come prepared for the May push to get it done by Memorial Day.
And Jason, do we know whether those bills, the Senate and House version, have language that will mollify the privacy community? Because they have issued pretty tough language about some of those bills, saying that a license to conduct surveillance and this kind of thing. And the White House, too, has weighed in against some earlier versions, saying that the information sharing apparatus or specification that's in those bills doesn't protect privacy enough, personalized information. What's the status there?
From the event yesterday at CSIS, what they talked about was there's been a lot of discussion that both the Senate and House have been working closely with the privacy and civil liberties communities to say, okay, what can we do to make everybody happy? And I think that's part of what's going to happen over the next 2 months is really iron out the specific details of the bill to make sure that as much as possible people are happy. Now, as we know, Tom, no one's ever happy. So I think there's still a lot of work to be done, but I think they are addressing those issues around privacy and civil liberties.
All right, Jason Miller is Federal News Radio's executive editor. Thanks so much for that report.
Always a pleasure.